everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 177. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 4 episode 10 Hush and Angel season 1 episode 10 Parting Gifts. As usual, if you'd like to get in contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, find us on this post on hypeable.com, or shoot us a message at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as usual, please keep those spoiler-free for the newbies. All right, my name is Karen, and I am joined by Natalie, Kristen, and Ariana today, and we're going to jump into fun facts. So, Ariana, why don't you go first? What's your fun fact for this week?
My fun fact is that I am crushing hard on Wesley Wyndham Price. That is my fun fact.
Well.
That's super cute. All right, Kristen, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I believe it was early this week, I started watching The Secret Circle, which is that one season long canceled show on the CW that was also based on a book by L.J. Smith, who wrote the Vampire Diaries books. It's based on another series, and I actually really like it, guys. Like, I'm really kind of sad that it is going to end in another 5 episodes or something. It's really cute, and it's got a lot of familiar faces, so if you're, you know, bored and you need a short show to kind of tide you over until the crazy new shows begin in September, end of September here, give Secret Circle a try. It's actually really good.
And there are a lot of cameos of people yes. that we're familiar with.
So I was going to say, I've always been hesitant to start it because I feel like it'll bum me out once it's over.
I'll let you know how it ends and whether or not it's like a at least satisfying ending. I have no idea how it ends. So that's a surprise.
My fun fact for this week is that after 8 months, I finally have glasses again. And as Kristen can attest, I am very excited by this. The day that I got them, I couldn't stop smiling. It's so nice to be able to see people's faces again, guys.
What has she's been so... doing since then?
Huh?
How have you been living since then?
In a blurry haze. No, I actually... My vision's really not, like, that terrible. It's just hard for me to read, which, you know, can be difficult, but I've been doing okay. I can get around. I can see people's faces. It's not that bad, but long distances are a bit hard, like reading signs and stuff, but I've been doing okay.
What about driving?
I don't drive.
I drive her everywhere. I'm her chauffeur. But she does look very nerd chic in her glasses, guys. They're really cute.
Thanks. All right, Nat.
Fine. Look, there's nothing in my life at the moment. All that happens is that I go to work, I watch Supernatural on a schedule of 2 to 3 episodes a day. It's actually 2.2 episodes that I have to watch a day if I want to be caught up by the time the new season starts. And so last week I talked about a Buffy cameo that was on Supernatural of James Masters and Charisma Carpenter. And this week, since that event, I've had another Buffy cameo on Supernatural, which was Mr. Mayor Richard Wilkins III. I have no idea what actor he was. Played a really ineffectual scholar that helped the guys research something after their usual research sources all died and they didn't have any, you know, like backup anywhere. So they went to some random professor at a university, and it was the mayor from Buffy. So that was my main experience this week.
We just saw the mayor in West Wing, didn't we?
Yep.
Yeah, he showed up in West Wing, and I was like, why do I know that face? He was evil somewhere, and we figured it out.
Let's look up what his actual name is. The actor is called Harry Grainer. So, yeah, Harry Grainer, who I'm assuming is a, you know, has a career in doing character acting, over time. He was in the episode of Supernatural that I watched. Clearly he was in the episode of West Wing that Karen's watching. So there you go. Thrilling.
Awesome. Okay. Let's jump into Buffy 4:10 Hush, because I am so excited to talk about this episode. I requested it especially, and Selena was kind enough, slash she wanted to do other episodes bad enough that she let me have this one. So, Mitch wrote the doc this week, and his synopsis reads, "In this episode, the gentlemen take over Sunnydale by capturing everyone's voices. When creepy floating men are snatching hearts in the middle of the night, Giles takes it upon himself to fell the storybook creatures. He teaches Buffy that a human voice will defeat the men, leading her and Riley on a collision course at the clock tower. With both secret identities revealed, Riley releases the town's voices from a box, and Buffy screams until the gentlemen's heads explode. Meanwhile, Willow starts a potentially sultry relationship with fellow witch Tara." That was surprisingly straightforward.
I love how Mitch, though, like, feels the need to find sexual tension with everyone, though, like, with every person everyone ever interacts with.
Yes. That will be his legacy. Okay, so very interested, newbies. What did you think about this episode? Why do you think that us super fans tend to love it so much, and did you feel the same way? Ariana, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, this episode was really, really good. I had to watch it with, like, one eye closed, though, because it's terrifying. Oh, my God, they were terrifying. So scary, those men. Ah, and I don't do well with scary things. But it was really good. I can see why it was nominated for an Emmy.
Yeah. And Kristen?
Yeah, let's just say that Karen gave me a heads up that it was... I got really creeped out by that hospital episode with the invisible guy, because when he wasn't invisible, his face literally freaked me out. I can't remember the name of it. It was from earlier seasons of Buffy.
The Kinder Stud.
Yeah. Creeped me out. So Karen knows that it's the creepy mask thing, creepy face thing that I just can't handle. So she warned me that this had a little bit of that. And so when we first started the episode, I was really freaked. But I have to say, after a little while, their faces creeped me out less. So I didn't have to hide my face after the first, like, 10 minutes. But no, it's a really good episode. It's really strong, like, for an episode where they don't talk for at least, what, a half an hour, 45 minutes, or half an hour of it or so, it's, you don't miss it. Like, you can almost hear the voices of these characters even though they're not talking. So I thought it was a really cool kind of experiment.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a little mean because I kept looking over at Kristen, seeing her buried under her blanket and laughing. And I felt bad because I wasn't really, like, laughing, but just because I was fine, I knew it was coming, I wasn't scared, and I guess I take pleasure in other people's pain, so that's something you guys didn't know about me. Alright, Nat, where does this episode rank for you, and what does it mean to you in terms of, like, the overall series?
Well, it's interesting because you know, I do feel pretty strongly about it as an episode in terms of the uniqueness of it. Like, you know, it definitely sticks out as, hey, that's a special thing that Buffy did. And there were definitely memorable moments in it which were funny, if you know what I mean. Like, in terms of, you know, I think the scene in the auditorium when they're, you know, having the... Mm-hmm. The slideshow presentation is like a really memorable scene of television in general. But I didn't remember really how I felt about it emotionally, whether I liked it, like whether I didn't like it and stuff like that. About whether it was like, I don't know if I would have like ranked it a fave, if you know what I mean. It's just like objectively, you know, that that's a good quality episode, that that's a unique Buffy episode. I don't know if I would have ranked it a fave. Now I probably would. I had like some emotional reactions to watching it this time that I don't think I've ever had before, because like of viewing it through a certain lens or you know, coming at it a different time period, and I'm really happy about it now. Like, I really have a lot that I feel about it now, and it comes in the moment, it comes in a time, I think, of the period of Buffy, you know, where everyone's at, whether it's, you know, with Xander and Anya, whether it's with you know, Spike, and whether it's with, you know, what's going on for Willow. you know, Buffy and Riley even, and obviously the discovery of their secret identities. It's kind of like a really big catalyst, this episode, for like the setup of the new dynamic of the show. I think that this is the moment that the college era and the relationships and the general dynamic of what the college era Buffy and or the post high school Buffy is really like. It was all sort of growing pains until now, and this is a big catalyst for how the show is gonna be, kind of.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. There are two major reasons why I like this episode so much. One is the gentleman. I think that they are one of the coolest, creepiest villains I've ever seen on TV. I love that dichotomy of the fact that they are terrifying to look at, and the crimes that they're committing are extremely violent. I mean, they're ripping people's chests open and pulling their hearts out, and yet they smile the whole time, and they're polite to each other, and their little golf clap, which is like so
yeah,
that-
Yeah.
It's just, like, to have those things and pair them together, like, I would never think to do that, and yet it works so well. And even, like, their little minions, which are completely the opposite of them, you know, they move around so much, and they're sort of animalistic in nature, whereas these are literally, like, gentlemen, they're a little posh. I just think all of those elements coming together make for something really unique, and let me tell you, you do not forget about the gentleman easily. Those things just stay stuck in your brain forever.
Yeah, it really haunts people, this episode. Like, you can say the gentleman to anyone, even casual Buffy fans, and they're like, ugh.
Like, it's kind of like a Weeping Angels level of pop culture, iconography in contemporary pop culture, I think.
Yeah. And the second reason why I really like this episode is because it is so brilliantly set up, in that at the beginning of the episode, and even before that, like, some of these things have been set up for a long time, where there are these issues that are kind of, you know, boiling right now. And you've got Anya and Xander fighting at the beginning, where Anya doesn't really think Xander cares about her. You've got Willow and Tara at the beginning of the episode, where they're kind of trying to talk, but they're stepping around, you know, what they really want to talk about. And there's Riley and Buffy, who are, like, trying to figure out what they mean to each other, and of course have these secret identities that, you know, they don't know about. And all of that is brewing. And then throughout the course of the episode, when nobody can talk, when nobody can talk about the things that are bothering them, most of them get resolved. We see through his actions that Xander really does care about Anya. We see Buffy and Riley kiss. We see Tara and Willow come together and work together. And you kind of figure out that Tara also, you know, has some powers. And then we see the reveal of Buffy and Riley, which has been brewing forever. And then by the end of the episode, when they can talk again, they don't know what to say. And it just, I don't know, it always really hits home for me just how brilliant this episode is, in terms of the fact that they're not talking most of the time, and yet so much is accomplished. And I think, Nat, you really hit it on the head when you said this is a turning point for a lot of the dynamics, and so it's a catalyst for a lot of what comes next. And I just think that it's really cool that it all happens in this episode, where they're not talking most of the time.
Mm.
So, before we get into discussing the actual episode and some plot points and character developments, I just wanted to talk about a few things regarding this episode, because it kind of is such a big deal. And I think that newbies and even super fans who might not have known some of these things will be really interested to learn some facts about the episode. The first major thing is that, as we all know and we've talked about before, the dialogue in the show is really good, and it's one of the things that critics have always praised about the show. And so Joss wrote this episode after critics said that the dialogue was the most successful aspect of the show. And he kind of wanted to prove, probably as much to them as to himself, that he could do something like this. And I was reading a little bit about it. Are you laughing?
Yeah, because, again, it's, like, I do really appreciate that, but it's, like, it's such an Like, it's such an arrogant move. In the same way that setting up, like, plots, you know, early on in the show when you don't know whether you're going to ever get to fulfill them, it's such a confident and arrogant move on the part of a show writer to be like, oh, this is what they think is good. Like, you know, well, you know, and you could totally take that in a non-insulting way. You could sort of totally be like, you know, oh, well, you know, we're going to try and challenge that. If that's what people think we're coasting off, we're going to challenge that or something like that. But, you know, you can imagine it being such a petty little, like, well, let's see if I can prove that wrong, you know. And
well, just so humble, Natalie. I can't imagine it would be petty.
It's just such an example of how many risks I think that the show took for the time, and how much of those risks came from someone just really just having this faith or this confidence that came from a place that I can't even imagine that people would keep believing in the show. So, yeah. It worked, but it just is funny to me.
It does. I was actually surprised to read that he was, like, quite scared about doing this and not sure that he could pull it off.
Certainly a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Which
he...
Oh, go ahead.
He is a man who loves a witty quip, so for him to take that out, I'm sure was quite the challenge.
Yeah. And more than half of the episode has no dialogue. There's 17 minutes out of 44 total minutes with dialogue. And I've never seen anything like this before. Do you guys know of anything that's done something like this?
I mean, not in normal television, I don't think.
Yeah, I can think of, like, specific characters that maybe lose their voice, but never all of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And, you know, the fact that they had that score, that very, like, sort of Tim Burton-esque, like, Haunted Mansion-esque, like, you know, classical score with the gentleman and stuff like that, like, it was... I was listening really hard to, like, what sounds they did include, like, what sounds that they chose to keep in terms of, like, the, you know, people's movement, obviously, like, you know, dropping something, all of the actual sounds in real life, and just the way that people reacted to that, like, when the guy drops the jar, he's so, like, horrified, like, and people looking at him because, like, there's no regular, you know, sound to cover it, and it's just... Yeah, just what they chose to leave in and take out in terms of sound is so weird. But, yeah, I don't know.
And I heard a lot of people really praising the music in this episode just on Twitter and stuff like that. And it stands out, you know, when people aren't talking over the top of it, when you're so aware of the lack of sound, you really pick up on the music, and I think they did a good job with that. So, as Ariana mentioned, this was nominated for an Emmy for Outstanding Writing for a Drama Series and for Outstanding Cinematography for a Single Camera Series. And this was the only episode in all of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that was nominated. So, again, this episode is kind of a big deal, and I think it's pretty easy to figure out why. And then the gentleman... Like we said, they're so creepy, and apparently they were inspired by a nightmare that Joss had as a kid, and they were fashioned after Nosferatu, Pinhead from Hellraiser, and Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, which actually kind of makes a little sense.
All of that. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine having a nightmare like that, though? Like, I would never sleep again. And I have to mention that Doug Jones played the lead gentleman.
Because
she's fantastic, that man.
I love him so much. In case nobody knows who he is, because, you know, maybe there's some out there, some of the things he's been in, Abe Sapien in Hellboy, he was that weird eye creature, the hands and the eyes, or the eyes and the hands. Labyrinth, Pan's Labyrinth.
He was in Falling Skies. He was the alien, who the nice alien in Falling Skies.
Is this why you want to watch The Strain, Karen?
Yeah, that's part of it. I found out he was in it. I was like, well, now I have to. He was also in Teen Wolf, by the way.
Yeah. I feel like every time they need somebody to be in a costume, like, they call him.
Yes.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
So good. Cool. He's going to be in The Shape of Water, I think that's what it's called. Guillermo del Toro's new movie. And he's going to play, apparently, like, a really crazy sort of monster that Guillermo created and is really proud of. It took him, like, 9 months to create this thing. And, of course, Doug Jones is going to play it. So this is sort of his bread and butter. So I'm... And you can
interesting
just
life.
Him.
Like, I don't know how you get into that kind of life, you know?
I don't know. Well, apparently you have to be...
I got to interview him at Comic-Con once. Last year, I interviewed him at Comic-Con. He was hilarious, of course.
Yeah, I really like him. He's cool. All right, let's talk about the actual episode. We did talk about the gentlemen and their minions a little bit. They're fairy tale creatures who need to collect hearts, and they perish at the sound of a human voice, and they're kind of based off of, like, Grimm's fairy tale kind of creepy monsters that you see in those types of stories. So they're stealing voices and that sort of thing, and we never really find out why. We never really get a lot of answers about the gentleman, and I think that almost makes them creepier.
Yeah, my big thing watching it was, like, but why do they need hearts? Like, what? This is just what they do? Like, is it, like, we never really got, like, the why. I don't know if it was what was important. Do you think that those kind of things need to be cleared up all of the time?
I don't. Well, I think especially with this episode, because so much is left unsaid, both because they can't talk and the end scene, that it's kind of nice that also we don't find out everything about the gentleman.
I'm curious, like, in the episode, it's based off of a fairy tale. It's based off of an actual fairy tale, right?
I don't think it's based off of a specific...
I'm not sure if they're, like, real legend. Like, I'm not sure if there are, like, legends in this real world, if you know
okay.
what I mean. I think
because I was going to say, like, you could probably find out if it was, but I couldn't remember whether they ever really said the name of the story or whether they just kept saying based in fairy tale. Like, that was, yeah, I couldn't remember, but it doesn't really bother me that we don't know exactly why they wanted hearts, you know, just the fact that they needed them and were violent was plenty for me.
Yeah.
And they were quite violent, which, like I said, compared to, like, how polite they were and stuff, it was so weird, but it works at the same time.
Pleasantly violent. Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Willow and Tara, because we see that we're introduced to her at the beginning of the episode. She's a little awkward. Kind of quiet, but she is kind of the only one that's on the same page as Willow. And I kind of wanted to see what you guys thought of her right off the bat. Kristen, do you like her, don't like her? Do you have any feelings about her yet?
She seems like a solid, you know, possible friend for Willow. She needs somebody who can, you know, to kind of bounce things off of as far as magic goes, because she's officially out of Giles, like, wheelhouse. Like, he knows spells and can do it, but he doesn't have an interest in really cultivating what she is doing with her magic. So she needs somebody who's interested in it too. And after, like, seeing the meeting with the Wicca group, like, I'm glad that someone there seemed to be trying to get out of it what she was, rather than the rest of them were all just superficial and annoying. So,
I don't know if they were superficial. Like, I don't know enough about Wicca, but that did make me kind of uncomfortable, because I do know that it's like a spiritual thing for a lot of people. And yeah. Willow was just kind of dismissing that, and I was like, oh, I don't know.
I had a couple of friends in college who were Wiccan, and there's different levels of it for sure, but, like, comparatively speaking, they were looking at the more superficial parts of the religion and the beliefs than Willow and Tara were. Like,
yeah,
it was just a different level of interest there. Not that they were, like, just playing around, but they just had different levels.
And I think that it was that the Wicca group that they were in were, you know, Willow went to it maybe expecting, hey, other people who genuinely believe in the supernatural and know that these kind of things are possible and practice doing it, whereas these girls were actually not, just not that. Like, they were not people who were actually practicing magic or attempting to practice magic or having any even true beliefs in it, you know, like in the ability for it to actually happen, you know, like. So I don't know, like, that's just sort of interesting to think about in the world that the Buffy exists in, that there would still be these people, I guess, practicing Wicca in the way that you'd think most people practice Wicca in the real world, maybe, where we don't actually expect spells to work and stuff like that, and that, you know, that there is spirituality that you could look into surrounding that. But it's interesting that in that world where that kind of magic does actually exist, that sort of, that this has still been going on, that people haven't actually tried to push it a bit further.
Yeah. Ariana, what's your first impression of Tara?
Well, she has great hair. I'm obsessed with her haircut. And, like, she was doing that, like, gray thing, like, grayish purple hair before it was cool, like, before Kylie Jenner stole it. So I love that. I also really like that she kind of reminds me of, like, old Willow. Like, season one Willow, she's, like, shy and, like, oh, I don't know, it's, like, I don't know. But also she's, like, kind of gutsy, but, like, secretly. I also think it's kind of weird that she, like, looks so much like Willow. But, yeah.
And
I don't know if she looks like Willow, but I think I know what you mean. Like, I'd never thought about it like that before, but I think I know what you mean.
And because Mitch is asking, of course, he feels that there was something sultry in that final hand-holding. Did either of you guys feel that way?
I mean, it was kind of sexy at the end. Like, I definitely felt, like, the vibes going on. But I kind of, I mean, I think I took it as, like, a Willow really love. Like, she's getting a little bit power-hungry, which I think we've been seeing for a while. So I don't know, maybe she'll, like, try and steal Tara's power and squash her out.
That just escalated quickly. Yeah. No. Yeah, it could. It definitely could. I can see where he saw it, because there's something else going on there. I just wasn't sure what it was, so.
I just love that every time we get a new little nugget of information regarding witchcraft and Willow's powers, it makes me really excited, because it's one of those things, and I think you guys talked about it last week, that really developed over the whole series so far. I mean, we're in season 4, and we still don't really know all there is to know. We don't know the extent of her power, but we've seen glimpses of what she could be, potentially. And now we know, like, the two of these girls together are stronger, and we can see that when Willow struggles, if she leans on somebody else, it helps her. And maybe it'll turn out like Ariana said, and she'll kill Tara and take her powers and squash her like a bug, or maybe, you know, they'll end up working together. But either way, I always get excited when new information is kind of added to this well of knowledge that we have about it.
Yeah, because obviously they were originally, you know, can we do a spell? You know, so much of it's in Harry Potter. It's in lots of different aspects. Like, you know, this idea of doing a spell, like having particular incantations and stuff, and then switching to only mental control. You know, like non-verbal magic and stuff like that. And it's interesting that, you know, she was able to pull the power from Tara like that and do that together. Like, you know, they had no way to actually do a chant or of, you know, any kind of actual spell that involved, you know, that base level of ritual and reading something out of a book, but that they are able to actually channel real power just from their own will. And that kind of also makes me ask, like, do you have to have some gene in you that allows you that kind of magic? Like, can anyone do magic if they know how to, if you know what I mean?
Well, Giles isn't very good at it, and he's been practicing for a long time.
But he can't, like, and he can't, like, move, you know, vending machines with his mind, you know? Like, he, you know, is it sort of once you start doing it with the incantations and you know what it feels like to tap into that, then you, anyone could do it? Or, like, why isn't everyone training themselves up in witchcraft is what I want to know. Like, Xander, get on it. You could do witchcraft, you know? If you want a power, just learn how to do it. If, or do you have to have something in you that's,
well,
like,
Xander has never been really good at doing his homework. So I feel like it probably is, like, really, why doesn't everyone, like, good at everything? It takes a lot of practice.
Plus, Xander with powers scares me a little bit.
I don't think he has the, like, ability to focus at all that you would need for that.
Yeah.
But maybe it's, like singing, you know? Like, some people are really good, naturally good at it. But everybody, like, can probably carry a tune if you practice.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, actually, because I feel like anyone could do it. I mean, first of all, you kind of have to believe in it, so that kind of explains why not everyone's doing it, because clearly not everyone believes that it's real, despite all the things that they've seen in Sunnydale. And the other thing is that it must have something to do with not only practice, but, I mean, Willow talks about, like, black magic and the dark arts and that sort of thing. So I think that must have some bearing on it, and I wonder if part of it is just praying to the right, you know, mystical beings and how much of an impact that has on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. There's people who do magic now, and that's kind of terrifying to me, so... I mean, or people who believe they do magic. I don't know. I'm very Catholic, so I'm superstitious about everything.
Yeah. All right, so I want to switch gears from Willow to Riley and Buffy, because obviously they know each other's secret now. And that's kind of a big deal. And I'm wondering, you know, are they going to be able to work through this? Are they going to feel betrayed, or are they going to, you know, understand each other, considering that they're both sort of hiding the same secret? So, newbies, do you have any projections?
I don't know what they're going to do, but I want them to just, like, talk. Like, I just want them to talk about it. I know they couldn't at the end, like, they just didn't have words. But they need to have a conversation and be like, okay, so what's with your deal? Why are you hunting supernatural creatures? Okay, here's my deal. Can we work together, or is this going to be a no-go and we should just part ways before this gets too far? Like, they need to have a conversation and be adults, so I'm really hoping they do that.
I wish so much that I cared more about Riley and Buffy's relationship, because I really like Riley by himself. I mean, I even really like him, like, joking around with Buffy, and I think he's interesting, and I like his, like, secret underground, like, alter ego, but I don't know, I don't feel the chemistry going on.
Nat, what about you? How do you feel about them right now, and also reveal?
I mean, I hate them less than I remember hating them, if you know what I mean. Like,
that's progress. Look,
high praise.
That's like a common thing, right? Like, people don't like Riley. Like, that's a fandom thing.
Yes, it is a common thing that Riley, compared to, like, Angel and stuff like that, is like a low point. Like, oh, Riley. Like, that he's like the low point of Buffy boyfriend situation.
That kind of reminds me of, like, Veronica Mars and how we were supposed to hate Piz, but we love Piz.
Piz is the best.
I know.
I don't know.
Anyway, go on, Natalie.
Okay. I like him a lot more than I ever remembered, like, liking him. Like, I'm like, he really isn't that bad. Why does everyone...
He's not bad at all.
Hate him so much. And I'm enjoying, like, yeah, the awkwardness and stuff. Once again, with Buffy, I don't, like, I think it comes down to herself, to the character of Buffy, you know, and the time given to exploring relationships and the actual personalities, that I don't really know why they like each other, like, what it is. It's like, oh, she's just interesting to me, or he's cute.
She's special.
Here's my thing about Buffy, and it's a pretty harsh criticism, so I'm going to try and make it not sound as harsh as possible. there's a lot of times with this show that the character of Buffy in particular, I think the other characters have it better for some reason, but that the character of Buffy in particular, I wonder how much they actually know about her or how much they actually planned her personality, not just her deeds, if you know what I mean. That, like, that there are times when I'm like, if you'd asked me, oh, how would Buffy Summers, the girl, react to X situation? I'm not talking about, like, a monster. I'm talking about, like, a life situation. I'd be like, I'm not really sure. Like, I don't really know what makes her angry or what she likes or anything like that on a personal level. And it really makes me wonder, like, and so that's why, like, when there's relationships, like, for her, I'm like, well, I don't know why this is important, because I don't actually feel like I know her personality that well. And this is saying that as a long-time watcher of Buffy. So,
I agree with that totally. Nah, I mean, I feel like that's been part of my issue in getting into the story, is I really like the idea of Buffy, and I think that they kind of created her with the idea of subverting tropes, but then maybe didn't fully develop, like, her.
Sometimes I don't feel like I know what her personality is, like, off the page, if you know what I mean, like, aside from the second that we're with her. Like, I think Brittany earlier, you know, brought up that there was a moment where they were like, you know, oh, that's our Buffy, and she was like, what is our Buffy? Does our Buffy have, like, a thing that we know our Buffy for? We know that she's kind of ditzy when she's not slaying. That's kind of it. And that's, I think that it does change over time, especially in the later seasons. There are other things that do come to define her. But at this point, I really don't feel like, if you gave me a hypothetical, that I could tell you something about Buffy's personality, how she'd react or what she'd want or like, which is weird. And again, like, again, with my watching of Supernatural, I think it stood out to me because I've been watching the two shows back to back. With those shows, it's very clear that the original creator sat down and was like, these are the personalities of the characters. This is how they'd react.
Even bringing it into our own world, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of how they were with Angel, like, the entire time he was on Buffy. But then once he got on Angel, now I feel like I know how Angel would react to everything.
Yeah, I definitely feel like that the Angel gang, like, Angel and Cordy and even Doyle, like, for the 10 episodes before he died, it had a different approach to, like, the characters interacting with the real world and, like, what they were like, what, you know, what would make, how they'd react. And I don't think it's every character on Buffy that has that problem either. I think it's just Buffy, and I'm curious as to why that happened.
I wonder, if you know what I mean. Because I agree with that, and I remember when she was dealing with the whole Parker situation, I was getting really frustrated with her, because I was like, this doesn't seem like Buffy, the way that she was pining over him, the way that she was so obsessed with getting back with him, even though she knew he took advantage of her. And I was frustrated, because I was like, this isn't how Buffy would act, it felt out of character. But the more that you bring up, like, well, sometimes she acts this way and sometimes she doesn't, I also wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that Buffy is always trying to be cool, and she always tries to change the way she is in order to fit in with the crowd. And I think we saw that a lot more earlier on in, like, season one. But I wonder if that's part of the reason why sometimes it's hard to peg how she'll act in certain situations.
Maybe it's because Buffy isn't even totally sure who she is. Like, it seems like she kind of has a hard time valuing herself when she's not a slayer. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, her whole definition of who she is now has been like, oh, she's the slayer. And if she didn't have that, what would she be?
Well, and depending on who she's around, I think she's a different person. Like, she plays out differently if she's standing next to Xander versus Willow. Like, just, she has different aspects of her personality that come out depending on who she's standing next to. She's so much more outgoing and antagonistic when she's standing next to Spike than when she's standing next to Willow. And it's, I think that may have come in, like, in the early years, because she was a young girl in high school, like, trying to fit in, trying to be cool, trying to make friends that she truly cared about. And so, like, flitting between all the groups, she would change depending on who she was in the scene with or who she was hanging out with for that episode. And now, you know, hopefully, now that she's in college, when a lot of, you know, people find themselves and kind of solidify who they want to be. Hopefully we'll see a little more of that, but I definitely agree with you guys. She's kind of the, she's undefinable. Like, you just don't really know who she is.
I think that's also why I enjoyed last week's episode so much. And I know that, like, Brittany hates it when Buffy is, like, under a spell, like, in Beer Bad, and yet last week, because she gets so, like, ditzy. But I really like it because I feel like that's, I don't know, like, she's resorting to her most primitive self. And, like, you actually see her personality, and she seems more adorable and more approachable. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Like, if you took away the circumstances of Buffy being the Slayer, if she'd never had to deal with those kind of stakes, not a pun, not actually meant to be a pun. But if she'd never had to deal with those kind of stakes, like, yeah, who would have she been? And that's an impossible question to ask because, you know, it was whatever, destined or whatever. But, you know, that there's certain things that would shape her and make her, you know, more willing to be, you know, a paranoid person or a suspicious person or a, you know, have a gallows humor or whatever it is that, you know, she, you know, has ended up getting because of being the Slayer. If she'd never had those kind of stakes in her life, what would have her genuine base personality been? And that's what I'm curious about. And that's what, as I said, like, I feel like we know that with Angel and Cordelia and some of the other characters. I feel like when I'm watching Supernatural that I know that about the Winchesters, what their base personalities and just what makes them tick as human beings, which is not something I knew that that show contained before I watched it. And then comparing it to Buffy, I'm like, I feel like I don't get this with the character of Buffy. And I was just like, why? Like, what happened there? So,
yeah.
I think that's also something that happens often with main characters. Like the sidekicks feel like they have a lot of personality because maybe they only have, like, one thing to do, while the main character doesn't. Like, I kind of feel that way watching Vampire Diaries, and maybe that's why I don't care for Elena. I kind of felt like her personality was flat, whereas everyone else was, like, had their thing going on. Yeah, but
that's a good point. I do agree with that, and I see that often in other media as well. I think this is a really interesting question, and one that we'll have to try to remember to come back to at the end of the series, because like Nat was saying earlier, in the later series you get some more stuff that I think define her a bit better, and she matures as well, so it's going to be cool, I think, to revisit that. But I want to finish up this episode with a couple of minor points. First of all, we can't not mention Giles' lady friend coming back, Olivia. I think we all really like her.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm good with this. I adore her. I love her, but now I'm worried because I feel like she's leaving forever. And I want Giles to have a sexy friend. I think he's fun when he does.
Kristen, do you like her?
Yeah. I mean, we don't really know much about her, but she's fun when she's around, and her reaction to the gentleman in the window is basically mine, so we can be friends now.
Yeah.
I think I mostly like that she makes Giles happy and brings out a different side of him.
Yeah, where did she even come from? Like, because I was like, oh, is she like an old school, like, watcher friend? But she didn't really. Like, she seems to be like a civilian friend, and he was kind of open with her about, oh, yeah, I do all this witch stuff. And
she calls him Ripper.
Oh, maybe it's from those days then, the Ripper days, an old college friend, and if they're such cool, sexy friends, then, you know, where was she when Jenny Calendar was hanging about?
Maybe she's, like, they're each other's booty call, like,
I think
hey,
so.
When you're in the States.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. Yeah. And then, Ariana, was there something specific you wanted to say about Anya and Xander?
Oh, no, I just really love them, and I know Brittany hates them, and so I feel the need to stick up for Anya, because I adore her. She's definitely my favorite character now, like, tied with Spike. So I really like her, and she's not too much for me, but then again, I also love Azula, so.
I'm glad that you like Anya, because I've been told for 10 years that the fictional character I most like in any media is Anya. So I'm really glad that you don't hate her. I don't know
really
how much
bad
I feel like you're not as awkward as her, Natalie.
But you felt bad when Brittany was slagging her off because you were thinking about me, Karen.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I didn't give myself this title, but it's what people always say. So, I'm glad that you don't hate her. And I think there's certainly parts that, you know, are not accurate about her, or maybe they were more accurate in the past. But Karen knows my pain, I guess, if she was being that empathetic about, like, worrying about that.
Yeah, but that's good. I'm glad. Kristen, you like Anya as well, don't you?
I don't love Anya. I don't have any really strong feelings about Anya. I do like her with Xander. Like, I do like them together. They're kooky and funny, and they get each other, so it's really cute. But I don't really have a strong opinion about whether I like Anya.
She's single-handedly redeeming Xander for me. Like, she likes him so much. I feel like, okay, I like him too.
I also think his, and I was thinking about this earlier, he's managed to keep his base personality and the things that make him him, but he's also just not as terrible as he was before. It's like they toned him down. Oh, definitely. But he's didn't definitely change grown. Him. And I feel like that was something that, you know.
Which is life, right? I mean, that's like how things are in life. We grow, but we still, like, our base personality stays the same.
Yeah.
That's except true. If you're Buffy. yeah, he has the same humor and the same tics, like the same things that'll make him get really angry, but they're kind of less toxic, if you know what I mean. Like they're the same sort of, like, quote unquote triggers, but they're about less toxic things, or less, mm-hmm. you know, especially when it comes to women, you'd hope. But yeah, I definitely really enjoy him in season 4, and whether that's because of Anya or not, I'm not sure, but I do see a great Xander increase in value at the moment.
That's good all around. All right, let's jump into favorite scenes and finish this up. My favorite scene is the way that everyone just tolerates Spike's presence now and kind of accepts him as a part of their daily lives. We see this when Giles is just, like, they're walking around the apartment. They kind of bump into each other, and Giles rolls his eyes. The way that Giles is like, Xander, you have to take him for the weekend. And Xander's like, but I don't want him. And, you know, he ties him to the chair and everything. And it's like they're passing a kid around, although a kid that they clearly didn't want. So I just think that's pretty funny and great, and a great way to continue Spike's, like, dynamic with the group. Kristen,
I totally forgot about that scene. Where he's which just one? Like, the one where he's like, Xander ties him up to go to sleep. Oh, that was great.
Have they actually said why Spike needs to stay with them? Like, is it just to protect them from him from the initiative? Why do they care about protecting him from the initiative? I suppose they don't because know if the initiative is evil or good.
He hasn't given them their information yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, really? They're waiting for him to tell them what he knows.
Remember where the opening was.
Is that the only reason? Like, I feel like I'd just be like, off you go then. Fend for yourself. Whatever. I don't care. Like, I mean, I love him being there. I'm just, it's just a bit weird. But, yeah. Anyway.
I'm hoping he'll be useful. Yeah. Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine is obviously Giles lecturing them all via overhead projector like a boss. It took me back to the days when we used to have teachers with overhead projectors and they'd write on them with, you know, the little markers. It was just really funny and so very Giles that he would, you know,
puts
like
on the music. Puts the music on.
Well, he needed some ambiance. Since they can't talk, he needed something. But yeah, it's just a really cute scene overall, like just all the different little parts. But I just liked the whole overhead projector. Like, of course he would figure out a way. Like, here's how I can do this. He has to give a lecture and it's going to happen.
And his drawings were surprisingly accurate and cute.
Yes.
I love that some prop guy had to sit there and, like, draw all those overhead projector slides. Like, it's so good.
And Ariana, you loved that scene too.
Yes, I did. Specifically, my favorite part was Buffy with the steak and, like, the awkward moment when everyone was like, and she's like, no, the steak.
Yeah. And Nat?
I think that entire scene, the auditorium scene, just to continue on that, is, like, from start to finish, one of the best scenes in Buffy and on television. Like, it is an iconic, like, the entire auditorium, like, no words scene is amazing. My favorite, aside from, so that's an obvious highlight, and you already mentioned another one which I loved, which was when they, you know, the gentleman presents the heart he's gathered and they do the little golf clap. But my thing that actually really got to me in the episode was all of the moments of wordless communication that kind of started weirdly making me cry. Like, all of the times when they were freaking out and realized that they had to reassure each other, like when they would, like, you know, Giles would see them and he kind of touched them on the shoulder, or the way people were responding to each other in the hallway. And just what that would really be like. And I don't know, it just weirdly got to me that, you know, that whole what could be done without words. And it reminded me of this poem, which I'm not going to read aloud to you, but this relatively famous poem called The Quiet World by Jeffrey McDaniel, which I've linked there if you want to read it, which is about a universe where, like, there's a government decision that you're only allowed to use a certain amount of words per day, so that most of the world happens in silence and that people do actually resort to this kind of communication in order to have, like, a stronger sense of humanity. And it just reminded me of that a lot, and I got weirdly emotional about it. So, yeah, that's what I liked. Read the poem if you want to.
Cool. And, okay, favorite lines. My favorite line is the little song that the girl sings, which sounds horrible because it's so creepy. I'm not going to sing it because I'll get the rhythm wrong, but she says, "Can't even shout, can't even cry, the gentlemen are coming by, looking in windows, knocking on doors, they need to take 7 and they might take yours, can't call to mom, can't say a word, you're going to die screaming, but you won't be heard." And it's just like, it's this really... I don't want to call the poem beautiful, but it paints a picture, and that picture is very
horrifying,
but it's, yes, also terrifying at the same time, and just, like, really iconic to this episode. I mean, you say, like, one of these lines, and a Buffy fan will know exactly what you're talking about, and it's just, I mean, and like Kristen was saying when we were talking about this, the fact that a child is singing it just makes it 10,000 times creepier.
Yeah, just kids singing scary movies, no. And it's always one kid, too. Just one little kid's voice over, like, the silence of an empty hallway. It's just creepy.
Yeah, creepy children are always the worst.
Yes. Kristen, your favorite line?
Mine is between Spike and Xander. And Spike says, "Like, I'd bite you anyway." And Xander says, "Oh, you would." And Spike says, "Not bloody likely." So Xander says, "I happen to be very biteable, pal. I'm moist and delicious." And so Spike says, "All right, yeah, fine. You're a nummy treat." And then Xander replies, "And don't you forget it." I just love them. Like, they're so ridiculous. And, yeah, when they have scenes together, it's always a good time.
Yeah, they play off each other very well. Ariana, your favorite line?
So mine was when Anya is, like, complaining about how Xander doesn't really care about her, and Xander's like, "Geez, you know, can you not do this right now in front of my friends?" And so Spike goes, "Oh, we're not your friends. Go on."
Yeah, again with the dynamic between them. It's just great. And Nat?
Mine was initially, like, a further part of that scene when Xander and Anya are having their weird conversation, and I can't remember exactly what the in-between line is. I think Anya's like, "This is important," and Giles goes, "But why is it here?" Which was actually my favourite line. But since we've already talked about that scene, I want to give a shout-out as well to Riley's sassy gay friend, who is apparently not gay, but if this show was made in 2016, he would be. His initiative buddy, you know, who's listening to him rant about Buffy, and he's like, "Oh, you think she's special? Wow, the first 486 times you told me didn't register, but now I see that you think he's special." So I like that guy and his turtlenecks and his making fun of Riley.
and
that's
his
so
alleged
funny.
Bisexuality.
You what? Said that he's like the sassy gay friend, because I feel like that's very 2016, but for like 90s movies, like teen movies, it was definitely like the sassy black friend, which is who he is.
Yeah. and he can't be black and gay. He can't be two things, Ariana. Like, don't be stupid.
That's too much. That would explode everyone's mind.
Yeah, but I feel like that, like, the dynamic and the kind of beats, like, of his, it's definitely, like, that kind of stereotype, which, yeah, was given to that, like, kind of, oh, he's kind of metrosexual, but, like, we can't also make him gay, because he can't be two things. So, yeah, anyway, I like him, you know, pity that he didn't exist in a time when that character could have been more well-rounded, but never mind.
All right, anyway. So that was it for Hush. Now we're going to move on to Angel, episode 110, Parting Gifts. And the synopsis reads, in this episode, Cordelia learns that she was gifted the power of future sight from the now-deceased Doyle. When word gets round that there is a new seer in town, a creepy empath demon steals away our Cordy and puts her up for auction. Wolfram and Hart win the bid on her, but that rascally Angel and his new sidekick, Wesley, foil the evil sale. Wesley may or may not be sticking around for future episodes, but one thing's for sure, he sure as hell will be staying for Angel's kick-ass breakfast. Mm. Yeah, so we kind of get two big bombshells in this episode, and we'll talk about them each. First, I want to talk about Cordelia, because she's now a seer. Doyle passed his power on to her, and I know there was some talk a couple episodes back about whether or not we wanted Cordy to have any special powers. And as resident cheerleader for Cordelia, Ariana, I'd like to hear your take on this new development.
Oh, well, I think it's fine. I don't know. That was, like, the least exciting thing about this episode to me. I'm terrible, I know. Kristen, what did you think?
I like that it seems like he knowingly passed this on. And so doing that, it's like he wanted her to have something to remember him by. Like, it, in addition to it being helpful for them, because, you know, Doyle's gift helped them find people to help, in addition to it still being, you know, a useful tool, it's all, you know, she'll always kind of remember Doyle seeing every time she does, so he'll be with her kind of from here on out, and I think that's really cute.
That is so sad. That is really depressing, actually.
It's not depressing, though, because he went out in a blaze of glory and was saving them, so it's not, like, sad that he's remembered. It's just happy.
I actually loved what Barney said to her before he turned evil, like, about that. Like, you know? So... Yeah.
Natalie, how do you feel about Cordelia having powers now? Like, do you remember your initial reactions, whether you wanted her to have them or not?
No, again, with Angel, it's funny because we're kind of going episode to episode where I have, like, really vivid memories of some of what happens in Angel. And then other things, I see it and I'm like, oh, yeah, like, I really didn't remember that this happened till it happened. And then I was like, oh, yeah, of course that happened, if you know what I mean. Like, it's – so I'm actually, like, getting surprised. Like, not in each – like, I knew that Doyle was going to die and, like, all of that. That's not what I was surprised by. But I forgot that this got passed on to her. So I don't know. I think it's good. I don't – you know, she kind of makes that accusation. Oh, I thought our kiss meant something, but he was just passing it on. I don't necessarily think that's true. I don't think that this was, you know...
I don't think he did it on purpose.
No, I think that the kiss was the kiss and that this is just what's happened, if you know what I mean.
There was the blue light, though. I know,
they were trying to act all like, oh, no, we didn't see any blue light. Like you guys, like, are crazy.
There was a blue light. It was clearly what was going on, and I just assumed he was doing it on purpose because, other words, I'm assuming he's kissed people before and it doesn't just pass on every time, you know, so I
but
just
that must have been the
it.
Powers that be. It must have been the powers
yeah,
that
be. Yeah,
I don't think
yeah.
he's gonna die.
I don't think it was him on purpose. Number one, when we talked about that last week, I had no memory of this, by the way. Like, when we talked about
really?
It, I was not covering up. I had no
so
memory.
So you weren't just trolling everybody?
No, Selena may have been, but I was not. So I think that though, given the actual context, which is like, oh yeah, of course, as soon as I saw it, I don't think it was him necessarily. It could have been, but I don't necessarily think it was him. I think it's more likely that it was the powers that be being like, better pluck that out of him and put it into the nearest living body, you know? So that possibly could have been what happened.
I'm kind of two minds with this development, just because I always like having the human characters on the show, because I feel like they bring something that, you know, the supernatural characters are always down for a fight and they're always the ones to save the day, and it's nice to have a human character who either saves the day in their own way or is just there to kind of be this window for the audience to look through. And the fact that they've, you know, decided to give Cordy this power changes that dynamic, but at the same time, I also like that this is in her fourth year. Like, obviously it's season one of Angel, but she's been on Buffy, and it's 4 years that we've known her, and now something is happening with her, and I like that sort of slow burn, that dynamic that changes with her now that we've seen her as a normal person for so long, and then, you know, okay, let's change it up a little bit. Let's see how this affects Cordelia moving forward, and that'll be something I think you guys will find interesting.
I know that Mitch was really hoping that she would get powers. I think, honestly, like, when you asked earlier, I didn't, like, know really my, like, I didn't know how to express my not excitement, but I think I am, like, a part of me is weirdly bummed that now she has this, because I feel like, I don't know why, I realize that sounds ridiculous, but, like, I kind of liked that she was the normal person, that she was just, like, so average, but she still managed to bring something, because I think that what she does bring for Angel is this level of humanity. Like, she's the one who always brings him down and is like, stop, Rudy boy. Like, let's come back down to earth. And it kind of bugs me that now he's going to, like, quote, unquote, need her. And I kind of like before how he kept her around even though he didn't need her.
Yeah. At least that dynamic already started before the powers came. Like, you know, like, at least it's like, I know what you mean, that, like, you know, someone has to be, you know, have this power or this contribution to, you know, whatever crime fighting team, supernatural team, in order for them to be like a necessary part of the group. But Angel's whole thing, you know, I don't think is like that. Angel, you know, it's like, oh, stuff's happened later on that, you know, Willow, I guess, had that, you know, as well. Like, you know, Willow and Xander both had nothing, and now they, you know, kind of have stuff. Willow at least has some stuff. So it'll be interesting to see, like, how long the powers last, if it's, like, a permanent thing, and what happens after, if there is an after, of, like, oh, am I just useless now? I used to do stuff, but she did stuff before as well, and it was very much one of the favorite things about Cordy and Angel to me, is that it is just this ridiculous, like, hey, we know about each other, we both know about vampires, so let's just hang out. Like, you know, I like that. So I think that it does, that dynamic does need to stay.
Yeah, and I don't think there's going to be a problem with it staying. I mean, obviously I know whether or not that's going to happen, but it's hard to talk about these things without talking about these things, but I just want to say that, like, this doesn't fundamentally change her as a person. So for people who are like, oh, I don't want Cordy to have powers, like, yeah, she sees visions, but it's not like suddenly she's a vampire or suddenly, you know, she's half demon and has spikes coming out of her face. So she's still very much Cordelia, even with the visions.
And I think the big thing there is she doesn't have powers to defend herself. It's not like she is now, and it's kind of annoying because it's on the flip side, it makes her even more vulnerable if people like after her like they were in this episode. But just because she has a power, and it's the same as Doyle as well. Doyle didn't really have quote-unquote powers. He had this power.
He had, like, strength, extra strength. He just had to be, like, in his demon form.
Yeah, but which I suppose he tried not to do. But, you know, Cordy is not, like, now magically equipped with the ability to, you know, well, maybe she is. I don't want to, you know, But she's still, like, a girl who's in the same position of, like, hey, I am a breakable human girl helping a really weird vampire. You know, it's not true. Like she's like, oh, I'm now fighting, like, on a higher scale. It's just that she has the vision. So I think that there's a difference there as well between powers, like whether a power is something that makes them, like, gives them more of a chance to fight, or if it's actually more of a vulnerability, or if it's just incidental, you know.
I think, I mean, I will say that it was worth it alone for the look on Angel's face when he realized that Cordy was his new link to the powers that be. He looked so, like, devastated. He was just like, oh, God. So, that was pretty funny.
He did have to sit down for that part.
Yeah.
And I do love that she's, like, particularly spazzy during her visions. Like, I kind of hope it's good that way. Like, Doyle was a little bit out of control, but she's particularly fabulous.
It's also amazing how she tried to kiss everyone to get rid of it. Oh, how did you feel, Kristen, when she just went up and, like, before we found... Oh, I guess we kind of knew. But, when, like, when she just went up and started, like, making out with Angel, and he's like, what are you doing?
I honestly was
trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, I just thought it was hysterical. I figured she was associating it with, okay, I can get rid of it with a kiss. I'm going to get rid of this. Like, yeah.
I like how she's like, I'll give it to Angel. I'll give it to anyone. I don't care. Anyone else can take this.
Somebody, and please.
And I liked how in the kiss, like, both of them, like, on her part and his part, were both, like, arching their bodies, like, away. Like, even her, like, you know, she was clearly not going for the romance there or anything like that. Like, they were both like, But,
her,
yeah,
kiss
she
was Wesley, really... though, this time, was much hotter than last time. Not that it takes much to beat last time's.
That's true. I will say that, like, so far this show is very aware of itself, and I think, like, even Buffy is that way too, but just listening to you guys talk and remembering how I felt the first time that I watched this, like, you do feel this connection between Angel and Cordy, and all of a sudden they're kissing, and they kind of directly address that in the possibility of, like, did you feel anything? Oh, me neither, you know? And then, of course, they're kind of talking about two different things there. But then we get the second kiss with Wesley, because there was so much chemistry before that kiss, and then they kissed, and it was super awkward. But then the second kiss, it was a bit better, and even Wesley says that. And I think it's awesome that they're just like, we know what you guys are feeling right now and what you guys are thinking. Let's just, you know, jump right into it. But speaking of Wesley, let's talk about him. Ariana, take us away.
It's so much stress when you do that, Karen. Like, let's just talk about all things Wesley. Condense it into a sentence.
You can have two sentences.
I don't know. I think he's fantastic. I'm excited. I want him to stay forever. I love him. That's it. I think, I don't know why I love him so much. I feel about him the way that, like, Brittany feels about Giles, which I think says a lot about our personalities. And I'm, like, a little bit more extreme. I'm, like, just a little bit weirder, a little bit dorkier. But I think I also, what I really like about him is that he is super, super awkward and dorky, but also he has, like, some depth to him. He's got, like, a sexy side a little bit. He wears the leather pants, so I like that he's got a little bit of a bad boy side.
He definitely tries. How did you feel about his return, Kristen?
I quite enjoyed Wesley's brand of awkward and adorable on Buffy, so I'm glad to have him back. I think he's really entertaining. I want to know if they actually had the actor doing all of the, like, getting off the motorcycle stuff before you saw his face. Like, I want to know if it was actually him or not, because, like, it just seemed like such a badass, and then you see him in his jacket and it almost looks too big and the pants are baggy and you're like, what is happening? So, yeah, no, I like Wesley being back, though.
I find how awkward Wesley is to be extremely hard to watch. I tend to not look at the screen when he's being particularly just
crazy. Oh my god. Crazy.
Natalie, how do you feel about it?
It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a so lot of much. It was me imagining, like, what he's been like up until this point. Like, because that demon was, you know, taking him very seriously or whatever. And if he's been, like, traveling around the world for the past 6 months or however long it's been, you know, or traveling around America, like, actually being that badass, you know, like, that kind of, like, is he actually getting away with being that badass in front of people who don't know him, and then he just reverts back to the kind of, like, I don't know what I'm doing when he's around people that knew him before, you know what I mean? Or if he was, like, that awkward the whole time.
Oh, he's so
I believe him. I believe you, Wesley. You're a badass.
Yeah.
The leather helps.
And it's just, I don't know, it's so, it's a lot. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
It's just, he's so full of himself and just so, like,
he's a rogue, you know, team hunter.
Yeah. And, like, do you think that that was actually working for him when, you know, he wasn't having to tell it to people that weren't, you know, that already knew him?
No, I'm sure he wasn't great at his job. I mean, he's good for, like, reading, right? Reads a lot of books with his really big brain, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm excited. I feel like he'll be really useful for the team. I hope they keep him around and don't kill him in 10 episodes.
That was my next question.
Or before then.
Because it kind of leaves it open-ended in the finish of the episode, you know? He stays for breakfast.
Oh, my God. That was so stressful. I was like, no, you're being so mean. Ask him to stay. Because they do, I think, I love Angel and Cordelia, obviously, but I do think that they are better with a third person. And I feel like Wesley will add a lot to the group because he is good. They need, like, a Giles, like their own Giles, somebody who knows what they're talking about and has all the experience and can read stuff, and I mean, I'm sure they can read, but
do you think he's better than Angel though?
What do you mean?
At the knowledge, like at the lore and stuff like that?
Angel, well, that's his job.
A lot, and Angel's experienced a lot.
Angel was also, like, in the sewers for 200 years, so
yeah.
I mean, who's written academic papers and, like, studied the different philosophies.
Yeah, like, they need their own master of the books. Like, someone who can jump into, you know, the researching aspect of it and come back with answers. Like, that's not Cordy's strength, and it's not really Angel's either. Like, he has a lot of knowledge, but he's not, like, I must consult the books. Let's find out exactly what's going on. Like, they need somebody like that.
Yeah. I feel terrible because last week I did not feel terrible when Doyle died. And now that I've realized that it was, like, these horrible circumstances, now I feel like a terrible person. But, like, I always kind of felt like Doyle is almost, like, too normal to really fit in with Angel and Cordy, because they're both so weird in their own spectrum of ways. And I feel like Wesley, even in one episode, I felt like he had more chemistry with them than Doyle did in 10 episodes, just because he's, like, so out there also.
That's true. That's a good point. Well, we'll have to see if he sticks around, and if he does, what kind of arc his character will take.
So I'll just sob. He dies next episode, and I'm crying.
All right, newbies, we see Wolfram and Hart again this episode, so they're still sort of in the background. Do you guys have any idea what they're up to? Do you have any crazy speculation?
They don't seem super competent. I feel like they should be better at this, at, like, taking out Angel.
Yeah, they've had some real blunders. And Angel's not, like, particularly smooth, but he seems to get a one-up on them all the time, so I don't know. I don't know what they're up to, honestly.
We don't have a lot of information to go off of right now, so don't feel too bad about that. But, yeah, I like that they keep reminding us that they're there, though. You know, I think that's important, because clearly they're leading up to something. The other major aspect of this episode was, obviously, the two different demons, the empath demon that we saw, and then the Kungai, and I really love, and I want to say, Nat, was it you last week talking about the way that they treat demons on this show?
Personhood? Yeah.
It was a really interesting discussion, and the fact that, you know, once again they kind of trick us. Not only was that demon that he saw in the bathhouse, like, totally normal, despite the fact that he was completely just a demon from head to toe, but the Kunga.
Yeah, I love the demon spa, by the way. That's just, like, totally fine. Like, yeah.
And the Kungai was also not the bad guy. The bad guy was in front of them the whole time, and this demon, who looked much more like a demon than the other guy did, was actually a victim. And that twist, I think, is something that Angel does really well, and it reminds you that even if, you know, this person looks like a demon, and you might fear them because of that, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're evil or they're, you know, up to no good.
Yes, Kristen, how did you feel about this guy? Because I honestly, he made me feel icky from the moment he walked in. I was like, there is something weird about this guy. Like, he's just hanging around talking to Cordy alone. I felt like there is nothing good going on with this guy.
See, I was duped. Like, I thought he was no big deal. He didn't seem very, like, ominous to me, so I totally bought into the he needs to be protected, you know, whatever. I didn't have any alarm bells going off until, you know, we found out that the Kungai was not the one he was really, you know, that Wesley needed to be after. So yeah, I was duped. it's fine. I don't mind. I'm just gullible. It's fine.
But I think that's great when you can be tricked like that. I mean, it's kind of hard in the day and age that we live now that we kind of see a lot of those twists coming. But I feel like these shows sometimes really throw you off, and that's another reason why people love it so much. For the super fans out there, I'm just going to say that I'm excited about other things semi-related to this episode and certain characters that we see.
Ooh, like who?
Who
else did we see? We only saw, we saw the massage lady. We saw that lady on her phone.
Yes.
Who else did we see? The lady on her phone?
That was who I was really excited about.
Wait, are you serious?
No.
Gary, who are you excited about then?
You'll see. Okay.
But I won't remember. I don't even remember anyone else here. This is really stressful.
Are you talking about something that appears in the episode or just something that comes up because of things that have come up in this episode?
Option number two.
Yeah. What?
It's not what somebody in this episode. It's kind of related. Just don't worry about it. I'm sorry I said anything.
Oh my gosh. Now I'll never know. You won't remember.
I will remember. And I'll get really excited.
I was going to say, please point it out, because I will be a little crazy, too.
It'll be a big mystery, the grand mystery of my life.
Yes. Okay. That's a lot of pressure. All right, let's see. What else? So, yeah, kind of leading out, and we talked about this a little bit, but do you think that the changes in this episode, which obviously stem from the fact that Doyle is now dead, will change the way that the show feels? Are you worried about that at all? Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think that... because I know you guys have been enjoying Angel. So are you excited about these new developments, potentially with Cordy and Wesley, and if, you know, whether or not they're permanent, or are you a little worried about whether or not this is going to change the show fundamentally and it's going to feel different from what you've already enjoyed?
I think it's going to change it fundamentally, but I'm excited, as I feel like Wesley is an improvement. If he leaves next episode, I will obviously be sounding really dumb. But
yeah, I don't think it's gonna change all that much. I think you're still gonna have a lot of the same feel that we've had so far. It's just instead of having, like, Doyle's brand of funny and silly, you'll have Wesley's. Like, they kind of fill the same need, even though they didn't necessarily fulfill the same job for the actual, like, detectiving. I think they both kind of filled the same hole, like, the awkward, like, tension reliever. Like, they help to keep things from getting too serious. And so I think it's going to continue to be pretty much the same.
Cool. Well, that's good to know. As long as you guys stay excited, that's all I care about. Let's jump into our favorite scenes now for this episode. As awkward and uncomfortable as Wesley makes me sometimes, when he was trying to understand what the Kungai was saying, and he was saying all these, like, cherry and, like, all these
fish.
Random words.
No, not fish.
Demon. Like, it was so funny.
Oh, he's so wonderful. See, he's necessary.
Okay, I didn't say he was unnecessary.
That was so angry. Wow.
All right, and Kristen?
I just loved the visual of Wesley in head-to-toe leather standing next to Angel in his dark, broody coat. Like, it was like bad boy who doesn't intend it necessarily and then, like, trying too hard. Like, it was really, really cute. And I just died. So, yeah, that's mine.
It reminded me a lot of, like, cosplay. Like, you know how a lot of guys dress in cosplay and they just, like, do not have the muscles to pull it off?
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of.
It was really cute, though.
Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was the end scene when Wesley sits down with them to eat pancakes, because that was, like, the most stressful 30 seconds of my life when Wesley was like, Okay, bye now. Like, when are you leaving? But then they let him stay and eat with them. So that was great.
I don't know if you noticed, but Angel pulled the plate down before that happened and started filling it up. And I was like,
really?
Yeah. They
Angel's
both knew.
Great. Oh, I love all three of them so much. Oh, they're so fantastic. Yes, it was also closely tied with all the times that Cordy made out with someone. So it was like my shipper heart going in all kinds of directions.
Cordy gets everybody. And Natalie.
Mine was when Cordy is ironing the drawing that she did to keep, like, you know, to frame and give to Angel, and the look on Angel's face, he just does not know how to respond to that level of emotion. Like, he's just, like, he's so, like, frozen by it, and so that was randomly mine. But obviously when he's cooking for them and, like, he's a pretty good cook and all of that stuff, like, is... I love that he cooks for them. It's adorable. Mm-hmm. Just his little... He had a few great reactions, but that when she gave him the drawing was funny and cute to me. Yeah.
And jumping...
She's so sentimental.
And jumping into favorite lines, mine comes from Angel when he's talking about vampires. And he says, "Vampires don't sleep in coffins. It's a misconception made popular by hack writers and ignorant media. In fact, you know, we can and do move around during the day as long as we avoid direct sunlight. Got it?" And I love this for two reasons. The one part about the hack writers and ignorant media, because it just... that was Joss Whedon talking, like, clearly just... That was him. And then the other part was, because we always talk about, how does Angel get around, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, once again, they kind of directly talk about it and kind of give you an answer, explain it, and it just seems, you know, they're very aware of themselves, and I really appreciate that. And Kristen, your favorite line?
Mine's a Cordy line. She says, "Damn, I can't believe he did this to me." And Angel's like, "Who did what?" And Cordelia says, "Doyle, I thought our kiss meant something, and instead he used that moment to pass it on to me. Why couldn't it have been mono or herpes?" She's so cute, and I love her. She's great.
I love that she'd rather have herpes.
Exactly. Like, she would rather deal with mono or herpes than be a seer.
Yeah.
Poor Cordy.
Ariana?
Mine was at the beginning when, you know, Angel's like, you know, we need our space. And Cordelia is not having it. She's like, hey, we've got to stick together because I've got news for you, Broody Boys. We're all we got now. And I was like, that is super cute. And it was also, it really touched my heart when she gets taken and Angel, he's just like, hey, she's not getting taken. And I understood that he must be freaking out since Doyle died last episode. So that would be all of his friends dead.
Yeah, that would be rough. And Nat.
Mine was when Wesley was, like, trying to be all, like, badass and, like, you know, what an impression he left. And he was like, I'd wager you thought you'd never see me again. And Angel was like, tell you the truth, I hadn't given it much thought one way or the other. Because I feel like at the time it must have been really a voice of the fandom, like, really surprising for them to be like, what? Like, her? But it was great regardless because, yeah, it's just such a funny dynamic to stick together. And yeah, it was so awkward, the Wesley. It was so awful. But,
I laughed out loud. See, it's like the more awkward he is, the more I love him. There must be something wrong with me.
There's nothing wrong with you, I promise. Okay, so that wraps up Buffy and Angel for this week. Like I said before, if you'd like to get in contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypeable.com or hit us up on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Please remember to keep it spoiler-free for our newbies. And we really love iTunes reviews, and we really appreciate it when you give us 5 stars. In fact, if you rate us 5 stars, then I will make all your stains go away with a smile. I could have landed that commercial, guys.
You totally could have. I mean, all you had to do was not start crying, so, you know.
Thanks. I love that they thought it was, like, a choice. Like, it was, that's an interesting choice.
They were trying to be really nice. They were very kind to her about it.
Honestly. They were, yeah.
I actually felt really bad during that scene because clearly she was really crying because she was sad about Doyle, but I could not stop laughing. And I was like, this should be kind of an emotional moment and I should feel a connection with Cordelia and her sadness, but I could not stop laughing.
This episode was so funny considering last week's was so terrible.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to jump into listener feedback to wrap all of this up. And Ariana, would you grab this first one, please?
Sure. This one is from Lag. She says, or he, this person, non-gender specific, says, Something Blue was the second time this season that I thought Willow was turning into Buffy's season 4 Big Bad. I think the initiative will turn out to be a red herring and come to work with Buffy in the finale to take down Willow after she loses control. There could be some great moral conflict between Buffy, who wants to save her friend, and Riley, who wants to eliminate the threat. Good job. You should write this show.
I gave this one to you specifically because I know your current feelings about Willow.
What?
To kill people.
Yes.
You want Willow to kill people.
Oh, Willow definitely has got, like, a weird, dark side to her. Yeah, she's definitely... got some issues, I think, that are ready to bubble.
And jumping over to Twitter, Natalie, will you take this first one?
Yeah, so Laura Morrow123 says, Hush is still one of my favorites. Those men are still so freaking creepy, they might give me nightmares. Loved it, though. Well, I hope you don't have any nightmares. But it's, as I said, certainly incredibly iconic, those gentlemen, and that as a, you know, sci-fi villain. So yeah, welcome to that whole situation, newbies. I guess.
And the next one, Kristen.
Yeah, Cassandra says, I'm so PO'd. Did they have to kill my fave character in the most boring Angel ep ever? Lots of angry faces. Yeah, I liked Doyle. I didn't think it was really boring, but I can definitely see where you'd think that.
I thought it was boring.
I mean, there's a lot of, like, they were trying to be deep, and they were trying to really give Doyle's episode a lot without telling you it was his final episode. So, like, I can see it.
Okay, and the next one comes from Stephanie Merrill at S. Merrily, who says, "Hey, newbies, on a scale of 1 to Zuko abandoning Iroh, how much do you regret not trusting Doyle?"
-4. I don't care at all. I didn't trust him. I'm very disappointed. I still think his character arc would have benefited a lot from him being evil. I think he could have been redeemed like Zuko. But then, see, wouldn't his hero have been, like, way better if he, like, betrays his friends, but then in the end dies to save them? But whatever. I guess he was nice all along. I have to accept that. He's a nice man.
Yeah, I know nothing of this scale, so I'm just going to say that I liked Doyle a lot, and I trusted him. I never really thought he was, like, going bad or anything, so, yeah, that's just me.
And Mitch put this in here as editor's note to Doyle dying before his obviously evil intentions were revealed. It's a gif of Zuko and saying, that can't be it. Where's the rest of it?
So that was really cute, actually. Yeah, that was accurate.
All right, and last tweet, Adriana.
Caitlin Michelle at Kate Mel says, "Anyone else too busy singing along to All the Small Things to pay attention to the actual scene in Buffy 409? What is All the Small Things? Is that a song?
It's the Blink 182 song.
Yeah, that Willow was dancing to while she was drunk in. Which they all made a really weird big deal of. Oh, you're drunk. How very dare you? Like, you know, last episode where I'm like, oh, okay. Like, is that not normal for college people? But all the small things, Blink, it's very, very, that's a throwback. Yeah.
It was nice. I liked it. And our last piece of feedback is an email from Shauna. Natalie, do you want to grab this one?
Yeah. Hold on one like second. I'm just on the wrong page. So, I will remember you equals cursed child. Oh dear, okay, hang on a second. Let me just prepare for this one.
Brittany's the one who wanted this email. She, like, championed for it. So, take it up with her, Natalie.
Okay. Hey guys, so many rankings of Angel put Angel 1-8, so that's, you know, I will remember you in their top episodes, but after my most recent viewing, I'm not convinced. Having the entire day taken from everyone's memories cheapened any of the stakes that were somewhat raised. In the end, this episode feels like a better than average fan fiction. Although I enjoyed it as it was happening, the ending made me feel like none of it was worth it. I wonder if Jack Thorne took the ultimate page out of JKR's book by stealing a Buffy idea for Cursed Child. Ha. Huh. From Shauna. I don't know. Like, I know that the deal with Cursed Child is, you know, that they have that some alternate realities that never happened because they change stuff. I don't really know exactly. But I don't know. Yeah, I will remember you. There were some aspects of it that were really sweet. For me, it was mainly what I liked was the Angel experiencing the world stuff. I feel really weird about the day being taken from everyone's memories, especially that it means, like, that Buffy, you know, fell so deeply back in love with Angel but now doesn't remember that and is, you know, going ahead falling in love with Riley and stuff like that. And, you know, it definitely would have, like, fucked up the plot of the rest of the season of Buffy if Buffy had been, like, hung up on that day that she spent with Angel, you know. It would have not really worked for where they wanted to take Buffy. So I guess removing it from memory was the only way for that to happen. But I don't know, how did you guys feel about this, like, about that happening? I think I would have preferred Angel to become human for a day without Buffy being involved, but I don't know.
That's interesting.
Like, if he'd got to do all that stuff, but without her and her sex and happiness and whatever it is.
I know, he, like, didn't even go outside.
Yeah.
I feel like he just would have, like, done what he, like, he would have eaten a whole bunch of stuff and whatever, but then he would have been like, man, wish Buffy was here.
He wouldn't have enjoyed it. If Buffy hadn't been there, he would have just been brooding and been like, I don't deserve this.
He could have had ice cream. He remember when he went to the beach when he got to wear the Ring of Amara and they yeah. get to sit on the beach. He liked that, you know. He could have gone but to the zoo or something. But then he crushed the
ring because he doesn't want to have nice things.
He needs a therapist. He's so awful sometimes. He could have gone had some casual sex, you know? Like, he could have gone... Or he could have, you know... He could have just eaten a lot of food.
Like, with who? With who, Natalie?
I don't know. He could have hired someone. I don't care.
Wow.
Wow. That went to a place. Yeah, sorry. I'm not really sure that he would have enjoyed that day without Buffy, to be honest. But it's an interesting thing to think about. All right, let's wrap up this episode with... we found a name for Kristen. This is Kristen's Contemplations, spelled with a K.
Thanks, so, Karen.
We're going to talk about Buffy 411 Doomed and Angel 111 Somnambulist. It's very hard for me to say that word.
Yes.
Let's start off with Doomed.
I mean, considering where we left things... this doesn't bode well for Riley and Buffy. I'm assuming that their, like, pseudo-romance is doomed, and that neither one is going to be able to figure out how to handle all of this, and so now they're doomed.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of them at all. I feel like the whole world is doomed. Like, it's the end of the world, again.
Again.
yeah. Who is doing it this time? Maybe... Ooh, maybe Drew comes back? No, she's not powerful enough. I was like, who's a good enough villain? They're all gone or nice now.
The Master.
The Master. Yeah. The Master comes back and finishes his job. What, is there a pun for Doomed? Like, no.
Yeah, I can't.
This is a dumb. These are both dumb titles. I don't even.
These
know
titles don't give you much to go on. Yeah, it's kind of.
Ambulance.
Rough.
Is that like an ambulance? Like, sound, the sound coming from an ambulance. Who knows what this word means?
I've heard this word before, but I don't know what it means.
I can tell you what it means. Etymology-wise, it's sleepwalking. Somnambulism is sleepwalking.
Oh, terrifying. That's terrifying. It's going to be like this last show all over again. Hush. Those guys, they're going to cross over, and everyone's going to sleepwalk and kill each other.
Well... who do I think is going to be the sleepwalker? I want it to be Giles, because that would be really funny.
He's an angel. So he's going to be a crossover, an angel?
Oh, damn it. I wanted to put that on Buffy. Okay, well,
maybe it's gonna be
yeah,
Kate.
Angel the sleepwalker would be hilarious, since, like, does he sleep? Have we ever addressed
maybe
that?
Maybe there's, like, a demon who does that. So maybe it's, like, a vampire, because they sleep and in coffins?
That's, yeah. This is a very
we aren't very good at this. Title. Where's Mitch?
Yeah, really.
Mitch is much better.
Mitch would
at
have
these.
An entire backstory for the word and what it actually means.
He would. And instantly on the spot just come up with this whole like 2-page. Oh, Mitch.
Sigh.
Well, that was Kristen's Contemplations. Thank you for that. We'll see what happens next week. And until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Natalie.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.